This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/know-how. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what they're paying now, Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. Just pay shipping. Start your free trial today at harrys.com/know-how. Today on Know How,
an affordable gaming laptop,
a mystery box from Synology,
your questions, our answers.
Welcome to Know How. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to open up that dusty old box known as your knowledge hole.
Right.
And we're going to cram in a bunch of knowledge.
Otherwise known as the mystery knowledge hole, right?
The mystery knowledge hole. It just makes it sound better, right?
Yeah. It's a little more of an enigma wrapped in a mystery box.
It's for unicorn tears.
Unicorn tears. You saw the Starbucks drink, right, that they've been releasing?
I saw a picture that gave me a close-up of how much sugar was in that. 78 grams of sugar in that one drink.
We got one for Jerry here, and I could feel the sugar. I started vibrating when I was standing next to it.
I tweeted this out, and the writers of The Expanse retweeted it. It was I was at a Starbucks in San Francisco, and I guess it was like a one-day thing, like the unicorn drink.
Yeah,
and
I think so.
There was a customer who was like,
because they'd kill all their customers if they kept selling it.
But he's like, hey, don't you put no proto molecule in my latte. And the barista was like, oh, you got it, Bharatna. And so if you're an Expanse fan, like, you're geeks.
And since I'm not.
You're not.
And I mean, I could be, but I haven't watched the show. So just nerd.
It's like a cross between Battlestar Galactica and Game of Thrones in space. It's nice. You'd like it.
Incest in space.
You got Amazon, right?
Yeah, I got Amazon.
So you can watch the entire first series.
I'm too busy working on this show to watch The Expanse. That is totally not true at all.
But we do have a lot for you. Not only do we have your questions and our answers, not only do we have an affordable gaming notebook and maybe an accessory that I picked up that I've just grown to love, but I got a mystery box. So a box dropped on my lab yesterday.
Should I be scared?
Maybe. Well, the only thing, because it says Synology on the outside. So I'm like, okay, that's cool.
Right.
But they didn't tell me what it is. When I wrote them, they didn't tell me. So I'm like, you know what? We're going to open this live.
It's a Trojan horse.
It could be.
It's a Trojan horse.
Now, either it's a NAS or this could be the last episode of Know How.
It's going to be more of those Starbucks unicorn drinks. Just melted.
Kill everyone. Well, let's go ahead and kick it off. We've got one that was an email to us from a man by the name of Robbie Britton.
And Robbie wanted to point out that he loves the show.
Yeah,
thanks,
good,
Robbie.
Good.
And he asked, I got a lot of great info from your vlog podcast episodes. My question is, when I start my own podcast, do I need to pay a site to host my video content, or is YouTube good enough? Ooh.
Good question. Actually, I hear this a lot because YouTube is very alluring. Not only is it free, it's super easy to use. Not only does it have accessibility to millions and millions across the planet, so therefore it has a lot of discovery potential.
A lot of advantages.
But it also does things like live. And who doesn't want the option to do live on the same channel, the same platform that you use to serve out your podcasts?
Yeah, definitely. And you can do it with your phone.
Yep.
You can just send a link to someone. You can host multiple links on a different website. So it's not a bad option. But my only hesitation is if YouTube takes a cut.
Yes.
And if they ever decide that they don't like the content that you're producing, they could just end it.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, seriously, this has been a problem for even the biggest YouTubers.
There's a reason why we still have a website.
Yeah.
And not just on YouTube.
Because, I mean, it doesn't even need to be a malicious. It's not like it's someone at YouTube saying, yeah, you know what? We hate you. Forget it. We're never gonna recommend your videos again. It could be a slight tweak of the algorithm, which they do all the time because that's how they stop people from gaming the system.
Yes.
But they tweak, and suddenly, you go from getting 3 million views per episode to 10,000. Well, right. That's a huge drop. Not, and it's not just the number of views you get. They also could change the type of advertising that ends up on your channel.
That's a good point.
And
yeah.
Then suddenly the 3 million views, rather than being worth, what, $3,000, it's now worth $30. That could be a problem.
Right. So there have been YouTube stars that I've followed in the past that have decided to do their own thing once they got big, mostly because there is some change in some of the legal stuff so that they couldn't host their videos there anymore. But if you're just trying to get started and you have content that you want to get out, that's a good option.
Yeah, what I would say is absolutely. YouTube is a no-brainer. I mean, we do YouTube. We get like 1% of our views from YouTube, but we still do it because we understand it's good for discovery. Mm-hmm. People might happen across your channel. They might happen across your show, across your podcast, and that's a good thing. But And this was a big reason for why Twit is Twit. Leo did not want the network to be beholden to a distributor. And essentially, YouTube has become the distributor.
Yes.
That was the whole philosophy behind Twit. And I'm a firm believer in that. I like owning my content. It's not as if you're giving it away when you put it on YouTube, but you do allow others to take a chunk of it. Now, if you're just starting off, that's not even a concern. You just need to get your name out of there. But you may want to use the time to go ahead and start building up a parallel presence. That's what we've done here at Twit.
So are there any other options that you would recommend other than YouTube?
Yeah, I don't get expensive. Anything you do, keep it simple. Use a free account. You could use something like the Internet Archives, which allows free space. But the problem is it is fantastically slow.
Yes.
Don't even think about doing a video podcast there. You could do an audio podcast, maybe. There's things from WordPress that you could use that are a decent amount of storage. There is one I want to suggest, and it's not just because they're a sponsor of the Twit TV network. I recently started playing with their service, and it's fantastic. I didn't know they had a free service, but they do. Hmm. It's called Cloudflare. Alex, if you go ahead and show them that. They have a free tier that costs you nothing. Now, there are a couple of limitations. The most you can upload at any given time, a single client, is 100 megabytes. So, you know, shorter episodes, but that really shouldn't be a problem. But you get all the cool things that Cloudflare is known for. It's DDoS protection. You can run your blog. You can run your web page. You can have videos and pictures up there. What I would do is I would actually create a website with my branding on Cloudflare's free plan. I would embed my YouTube videos.
Exactly,
so there's a place that people can go to, watch the YouTube videos, but I own the real estate. I can own the ad space around it. And then maybe also offer them additional content on your website that they cannot get on YouTube.
Yeah, no, that's a good suggestion. And depending on the content that you're using, like obviously this is going to be video content because he's uploading to a video service. But if you weren't, you would just be uploading to like iTunes or something or SoundCloud. Although Patrick has told me not to use SoundCloud for podcasting because I guess if you get locked in, it's kind of a pain
you're
after
done.
That. Yeah. But if you're focused on uploading like really beautiful videos, more than YouTube, I'd probably recommend Vimeo. Have you ever used that before?
Yes, and Vimeo gives you much more control over your content than YouTube does.
That's what I would recommend. Because there's a few videos that I've done where I wanted it to be like cinematic, and sometimes YouTube has a tendency to compress like my GoPro videos.
Yeah.
And so if I do a video in 4K or I wanted to do 1080 at 60 frames per second, YouTube is perfectly capable of doing that. Sometimes with the compression algorithm, it gets like I get chunky videos just because there's so much fast motion in my videos. So just another option. And I've noticed like Vimeo does a better job of like video compression with my stuff.
I'm seeing more artists who are pushing to Vimeo because they can control how it's seen. And they control where it's seen. You know, some creators, they really don't want their stuff seen on a mobile device. And, you know, for them, it's an artistic thing. It's like, no, I don't want you to watch my beautifully rendered whatever it might be on a 4-inch screen. I want you to be at least on a laptop. And that's, you know, Vimeo gives you that kind of granular control. The idea with YouTube is everyone can see everything everywhere.
Yes.
And that's good. That's not a bad strategy. But if your content is a bit more upscale, and if you're looking at doing a controlled release where you can get some serious statistics about who's watching and when, Vimeo is actually a good platform.
Yeah, and I think also there's a little bit of a learning curve on YouTube with SEO and learning what tags to use and stuff. But once you start making content and uploading to YouTube, you can then get a sense of if it works or not for you and then maybe move to something else depending on how that works.
All right, let's go ahead and move on. We've got another one here from Carlos Velez.
Carlos.
Or Velez.
Carlos asks, I got the Maker Select V2 based on the show's recommendation. I want to go bigger, and I'm trying to build an LED bridge I downloaded from Thingiverse. It's a huge project with lots of parts. It started to print out well, but screwed up at the last minute. The project requires I print about 16 of these. I know there are ways to identify what I might have set up incorrectly based on how the print job failed, but I'm still too new to identify. Was hoping somebody could help. This is what was printed on PLA at 255, I'm guessing Fahrenheit temperature, non-heated bed at default speed.
Okay. Alex, if you go ahead and click on that, then you can scroll back and forth. There's three pictures. So this is what happened. As you can tell, just freeze here. There's a few things you can see. Automatically, he's got a layer adhesion problem. That's what the filament is. It didn't stick, and then it just started spraying everywhere. This actually happens a lot.
So this spaghetti is not supposed to be there.
That spaghetti is not supposed to be there. And actually, if you flip to the next one, I think he gives us another angle. You can also see the construction is bowed. And whenever I see bowed, see it like at the bottom? Look how it's sitting on the counter. At the bottom, if it bows like that, it means you're getting bad. It's not just layered adhesion. You're getting bad build plate adhesion. So it did not stick to the platform. Now, here's a weird thing. He said that this was printed on a non-heated bed. The Maker Select version 2, by default, has a heated bed. Huh. So it means he turned it off. I'm not sure why you turned it off. Turn that back on. What you're finding is this is thermal variance problem. So if the same material that's connected in layers cools at two different temperatures, remember, as a material heats up, it will expand. As a material cools, it will contract. So what will happen is, as the top layer cools, it will contract and has a tendency to pull up the bottom layer.
I've had that problem a lot.
Yeah. And so a heated bed, it doesn't get rid of the problem, but it really does reduce it. So the first thing is turn the heated bed back on. I don't even know where the selector is to turn it off on my V2.
That does seem strange. Let's operate under the assumption that either he has it turned off or he
doesn't know.
Doesn't know.
Yeah.
But also, I think for me, the thing that solved some of the prints that I had, that problem with the adhesion to the bed, was printing out standoffs at the corners.
Yeah.
And once you have that extra extra layer that kind of expands outside of the corners, it'll hold down a little bit better that way.
Right. And I thought that too. I mean, the supports are always good. But if you go back to that picture, Alex, you'll notice this thing's actually pretty big.
It's probably at the limits of the bed, too.
Yeah, it's at the very limits of the bed. But, I mean, at this size, that should be enough material touching the bed.
Yeah,
that
to hold it.
It should hold it. The other thing you can try on the V2, do not use a glue stick, but you can use Aquanet. It has to be Aquanet. It has to be the extra hold. It has to be the unscented.
That's the hairspray.
It's hairspray. Yeah. Use that. Put a very thin layer, super thin layer. You don't need a lot. And just wait for it to get tacky and then start printing. That's worked on my super, super stubborn jobs.
Okay, so that would solve the part at the bottom, but what is causing his printer to have, like, the spaghetti effect?
Oh, I was actually thinking about this. The spaghetti effect, he says it crapped out as it was getting towards the top of the print.
It doesn't have support.
He may have a misaligned arm.
Well, also, even with these X braces that are on the side of the structure there, like, shouldn't there be rafts
not sure which way he's printing this. That's the other problem.
It looks like, that's a good question.
Yeah. So, and you may want to repost into the Google Plus group and just tell us which way is up. That always helps.
That looks like the top.
The
PLA has kind of melted down. That looks like the top. But
The other thing you may want to do, and we covered this on an earlier episode of Know How, look for a free program called Mesh Mixer, MESHMIXER. There is a setting there to analyze the object, and if you have overhangs, it will add supports. Supports are just like little stray noodles of PLA that will hold up the parts that would naturally cave in, and then you just break those away after the print.
Yeah, so maybe that would help too. I think if Carlos can. Did he post with the STL file of that?
No.
I'd like to take a look at that and see. Maybe play around with it myself.
That's actually a good idea. So anyone who ever wants to post with a problem they're having with printing, if you give us the STL, we can actually toy around with it. It's much easier that way.
Cool. Yeah. All right, well, there's kind of an answer. Half answer.
Kind of. Sorry. Well, we got another 3D printing question from Ken Jensif.
And this is in the same vein of 3D printing. So he asked, 3D printer question, narrowed my choice to the Monoprice Maker Select series. Good call. For anyone that owns either the V2 or the Select Plus, I see there are tons of mods that are more or less required for the V2. Is it worth it to spend the $80 more for the Plus? Are there any required mods for the Plus? I'm ready to order as soon as tomorrow, unless there is a better choice in the sub-400 range.
Very good question, and it's actually something that we did mention, that I did a lot of mods on my printer. But here's the thing, I didn't have to. If you're not planning to move it around a lot, if you're not going to be jostling, it does work in its default configuration.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, I'm a maker, I'm never going to leave anything alone. So
yeah.
Of course I'm going to make mods.
Well, there's a chance that you might bump the table that it's on,
right.
But also I would say you stress test, basically, your 3D printers. They're going 24/7, generally.
Well, there's a little counter that tells you how many hours it's been in operation.
Yeah.
And, like, my other printer says, 300 hours.
Mm-hmm.
My Monoprice says 42 days. I'm like, oh, okay.
That's, like, the difference between a Final Fantasy game and playing World of Warcraft.
That's right.
Like,
Forever,
yeah.
But, of course, he's talking about the Maker Select V2 versus the Plus. Now, I got the V2. Patrick actually has the Plus.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of differences. So, of course, the V2 is a little less expensive. It's about $320 versus about $400 for the Plus. The print size is the same. It's about 200 by 200 millimeters by 170 or 180 millimeters, depending on how far you want to take it up. So
mm-hmm.
the volume that you can print is the same. The resolution is the same. It's 0.1 millimeters, so
okay.
100 microns. Of resolution, which is pretty, that's standard for a printer of that type. The same max extruder temperature at 500 degrees Fahrenheit, which means they're going to support both the same types of filament. In fact, they look very much the same. Alex, I think we have a link here if you can go to it. They look identical except for the fact that the Plus has the little control box that I have on mine. It's built into the base
the
station.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, not on the...
Well, aren't these all kind of based off that one guy's design that then kind of got copied?
Prusha, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel bad. I mean, he made a beautiful machine. It's just everyone else copied it.
Mm.
It's open source. That's kind of the thing. Here's the difference, though. The Plus is faster. It's a lot faster. It's 50% faster. So the V2 can do 100 millimeters per second.
Okay.
The Plus does 150 millimeters per second.
Okay.
That's kind of worth it.
Yeah, dude. I guess how much time do you have on your hands to do prototypes,
exactly.
Right?
So for me, the design is pretty much the same. So the same kind of mods you're going to make for the V2, you're probably going to want to make for the Plus. But that speed, it does make a difference.
Well,
because, I mean, you're going to want to print at the highest resolution possible.
Yes.
If you can print faster, better.
Well, imagine the amount of prints that you've done with
the printer
that you have at 42 days. You would have twice as much stuff printed in that time.
It'd be nice.
Yeah, okay. Good to know.
Well, we're going to be getting back to some of your questions, but first, you know what I want to do, Brian?
What's that?
I want to take a break for these messages. You know, there is something that we all do, no matter if you're into 3D printing, if you're into Arduinos, Raspberry Pis, or the Grow House series, and that is we eat. Unfortunately, what we eat is often the wrong things. We try to grab food that's around us. We try to grab food that's quick. And we know that it's not good for us. But, I mean, what are the alternatives? To go to the supermarket every night to pick up fresh greens and fresh produce to put it together into a meal that maybe you do or do not know how to make? Well, you could go through that rigmarole. Or maybe you could satisfy yourself with fast food. Or you could get an honest-to-goodness home-cooked meal every night with Blue Apron. A Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. They deliver seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Now, every meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. It's like know-how for your food. If you spend a lot at restaurants or at high-end grocery chains, you can now spend under $10 per person per delicious meal. Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. And by shipping the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, Blue Apron reduces food waste. No more having that jar of spice that sits back in the dark corners of your cupboard until it goes bad. Blue Apron just sends you what you need so you can make what you want to eat. Now, their freshness guarantee promises that every single ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they make it right. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental United States, and there's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. And you can customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences. You can choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. It's discovery for your taste buds. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. You can get recipes like lemongrass burgers and cabbage slaw with sriracha mayonnaise and pickled carrots, beef teriyaki stir fry with sugar snap peas and lime rice, or how about roasted pork and mustard pan sauce with asparagus and fingerling potatoes? Or try some three cheese and baby broccoli stromboli with tomato and oregano dipping sauce. Well, I'm just kind of getting hungry right now. Folks, you owe it to yourself to try Blue Apron. See what good food can do to you for a change. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/knowhow. That's blueapron.com/knowhow. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/knowhow now. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Knowhow. Okay, Brian, so we're back.
We're back.
We're back, and it's time for us to take a look at toys. This is my favorite part of feedback episodes, where we actually get to start taking a look at some of the stuff that's arrived in our labs.
Mm-hmm.
We've looked at speakers. We've looked at, you know, desktops. We've
3D
looked
printers.
At, and, of course, we've also looked at performance gaming notebooks. That's
Which
kind of...
is almost an oxymoron for me.
Right.
A gaming notebook. But
a
this one,
notebook.
I just looked through the specs that you had written in the show notes. I want to see this.
Yeah. So when we've had gaming notebooks on the show in the past, they've been kind of expensive. I mean, like the Predator series, which we love.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
I mean, for a good configuration, you can be upwards of $2,500.
Yes.
How
or even
about,
a Razer computers.
Mm-hmm, something like this. So this is the Acer Aspire VX15 series.
Mm.
Now, it is a gaming, it's a desktop replacement notebook, but here's the big difference between it and some of the other notebooks we've already had on KnowHow. Instead of starting at, say, $2,500, this starts at $800.
Which is pretty acceptable for a notebook at all. But,
oh, yeah.
No. Let alone something that has these specs that I'm looking at.
Yeah, this is a 15 by 6 inch, 1920 by 1080. This is a semi-matte screen. This is a IPS, so it's got great viewing angles. It's got a 7th gen Intel Core i5. This is a 7300 HQ. That's a 2.5 gigahertz all the way up to 3.5 gigahertz. We've also got NVIDIA's GeForce GTX 1050 Ti. It's a Ti version with 4 gigabytes of GDDR5 discrete memory. It's also got the Optimus feature, so it only turns on the GPU when it actually needs it. Otherwise,
that's nice.
It uses the integrated video so that you can save battery power. It's got 8 gigabytes of dual-channel DDR4, this one. This is upgradable to 32 gigabytes, so you've got the option to go ahead and
increase your memory space. Yeah, if you wanted to do some video editing, sure.
In fact, this is the one I used when I went away to Orlando. This was my editing box, and I was scoffed because I'm like, wait a minute, i5 for editing?
Yeah.
This was actually faster than my i7. So this 5th gen i5s have a little bit of kick button.
It's the 7th gen i5, right?
Yeah, 7th gen.
Yeah, no, definitely. With and what's the battery life on it then?
Well, they rate this one. It's got a 3-cell lithium-ion battery. They rate it for 6 hours, which I'm like, great, so that means 4 hours.
Right, this is what I think of.
I use this thing for 8.
Not bad.
So my battery times were between 8:30 and 9:15 with the Wi-Fi off.
Mm-hmm.
With the Wi-Fi on, I went between 6:50 and 8:15.
Okay, because see, when I've ever thought about getting a gaming PC, I've always been under the assumption that I will not be gaming on it on battery power. And if I do, it'll be like 1-2 hours, hopefully. But if I can not game on it and get an appropriate amount of battery life out of it that I want out of a laptop and then plug it in and game it on it that way, that's pretty tempting.
This is tempting. Now, I will say, when I was gaming on it, actually gaming, so I was playing BioShock Ultimate or Infinite. I had everything on at full brightness and I killed the battery in 4 hours.
That's pretty normal.
But I mean, it was everything was full power.
And you've got Ethernet on here.
Yeah.
Huh?
Let's talk a little bit about the port. So it's got USB-C, USB 3.1. Mm-hmm. It's also got two USB 3.0 ports. It's got one USB 2.0 port, HDMI, Ethernet, full-size Ethernet, which, you know, I kind of miss that, as well as a combo audio port and a lock port. So if you're playing, you know, in a, at a LAN party, you can actually lock this thing down.
I love this.
Yeah, go ahead. A little SD card reader, media card reader, so you can you don't have to carry one with you. Networking is provided both by that Ethernet port and by 802.11 ABGN-AC Wave 2 adapter, Bluetooth 4.0. And you know what? The audio on this is actually not bad. It's got decent power. I brought a set of speakers with me to Orlando, and I didn't need them. I just used the inboard.
Nice. Yeah. And for $800, that's a pretty good price for just a normal PC. It doesn't, like, I like the top finish. It does show fingerprints a little bit. We're pretty greasy, though. We usually eat potato chips.
I've been playing with your dog.
Well, yeah, that's it. He's a greasy. My corgi's in studio today, and he's greasy.
Right.
But I like this finish on top. I mean, mostly plastic construction, but it doesn't feel cheap at all.
No,
like,
no.
It feels like a really nice laptop.
It's really firm. I was expecting, because they said, we want to send you a budget notebook. I'm like, budget? No, send me the good stuff. This does feel like a Predator, but it's, you know, one-third to one-fourth the price of a Predator. It doesn't have all the performance, but, I mean, it's a 5.5-pound notebook, and it feels nice. The keyboard, I find a little bit squishy.
But
it's firm. It doesn't flex, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
And one of the other things is it does come with this one has a 256 gigabyte M.2 SSD, so you can swap that out. Super, super fast. Plus, there's an additional 2.5-inch bay in here, so if you wanted to put a large swap. SSD or, like, a super big hard drive, you could do that.
This screen looks pretty sharp, too.
Yeah, that's actually not full brightness. Where's brightness on this? Function and...
Oh, function and then arrow key?
There we go.
Yeah,
so it looks sharp. It's sharp and it's matte, which I like, because matte does look better. It represents the colors much better than a glossy screen.
Okay, well, so one other question I have, how hot does it get when you're gaming?
I had this thing on my lap.
This thing looks like it's vented pretty well.
Yeah, it's got two fans on it.
And then, the stuff on the back there.
Yeah, and it doesn't expel right into your lap. It's gonna push out the sides and the back.
These little they look like jet intakes or something.
Look at this.
I like it.
And you can tell that, because this is their Aspire series, but this looks more like one of their Predator series.
I like this. Yeah. I like this. Because I feel like if you're going to have a travel laptop and you want a little bit of power, I also don't want something that's crazy expensive or I'm worried about scratching.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm going to be going through airports. I'm going to be going to hotels. I might, you know, be taking this out onto the show floor to do some editing or something. This is pretty tempting. I like this.
And, you know, it's half the weight of carrying one of the larger Predator ones. So it is kind of portable. The Predator is one of these things where you keep in your bag unless you're sitting down. This is like, I actually could carry this under my arm.
Yeah, totally.
I didn't think I was going to like it as much as I did. I don't regret buying a Predator for the Rome trip that they could use it, but I probably could have gotten them one of these. They'd be perfectly happy.
Yeah, totally. I mean, my daily driver now at work is the Microsoft Surface, which works great for everything I do here, but I'm not going to game on this. No. And the other sacrifice that you make with this is you just don't have ports for stuff. There's no SD card reader. It's one USB. So if you're going to be doing editing out in the field, like, this would be... And then have your secondary screen with it, too.
It was perfect. With my little USB-C screen, it was perfect. It was great. Cool. Now, that's the notebook. Now, I did say one of the things I didn't like about it was the keyboard. It was a little mush.
Squish.
Which, I mean, it's a chiclet keyboard. That's what you expect.
Yeah. So do you have a keyboard option that you would hook up to this?
Oh, maybe. I was thinking, hey, Brian, you know what? If I'm going to be gaming portably, I want an actual keyboard. I want a good keyboard. And I'm not talking about one that gets thrown in with my desktop. I mean one that's actually designed for what I like.
One that will irritate people near you because of the clicky sensation.
That's a bonus, Brian. So what we have here is this is the AWKey. This is their KMG7. This is a mechanical keyboard. And for those of you who don't know what a mechanical keyboard is, just know that there was a generation of us who had nothing but mechanical keyboards. We grew up with mechanical keyboards, and they're the gold standard. And the reason why they're the gold standard, Brian, is because of this.
That It is a very satisfying click, isn't it?
Making sweet love to my ears, Brian.
You know, it makes me sad that there probably are people who have never experienced a keyboard like that in their life.
I for the longest time, I held on to my old IBM PC keyboard.
I know our director, Steve, he hangs on to old Apple keyboards.
Yeah, it's just the feel.
Just for that reason.
All of the keyboards today, and I don't care who makes it, I mean, there are some that are better and some that are worse, but they're all membrane. And so they kind of simulate a click, but it's not a mechanical keyboard. Mm-hmm. It's a membrane that pops the thing back up and down. This is actually it's a blue switch, based on blue switches.
Okay.
And it just feels so nice.
Let me see that.
Come on, Brian. Get out of here.
Ooh.
Right? It's like butter. Yeah, so this is an 87-key mechanical keyboard. It's got 6 color backlit presets along with 2 slots for you to fill with whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And, of course, as a gaming keyboard, you have to do the presets so that you can light up just the keys that are required.
It's really compact, too.
Oh, yeah. Actually, if you can go to the overhead and maybe drop the lights down a little bit. I want to show some people a little something-something. You know, again, I know it's not super productive, but... You know, geeks gotta want geeks. Brian!
Cool. Wow. Did you set it to that, or is this like...
This is their startup. This is the studio.
Oh,
so,
cool.
6 color backlight, 8 lighting presets with 2 customizable preset slots. This thing weighs 2 pounds, but I mean, there is something about a mechanical key...
That lights up.
...that just feels good.
And we're suckers for things that light up and change colors, so...
Yeah, yeah. Now, they do make a larger one of this, and they asked me if I wanted the 104 key or this, and I was like, you know what? The thing about the 104 key is it weighs 6 pounds. This thing weighs 2 pounds. I'm like, if I'm going to be portable with it...
Yeah, keep it compact.
Yeah, and this has... I mean, aside from the direction pad, this has all... the keys I need for gaming.
That's, all I really need. It's nice to have a numpad, but that's my desktop. Like, I wouldn't be carrying my desktop keyboard around with me anyway.
Right. Now, here's the super surprise, because these have been around, like, with the Cherry switches.
Yes.
But those are ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, because that's my preference. I like the Cherry keys.
But, I mean, like, a decent keyboard is going to cost over $100.
Oh, easy. Yeah, especially if it's individually addressable LEDs and stuff.
Yeah,
which
is what this is.
It starts to get pretty tricky. So.
Super expensive, super tricky, except this is not $100 or more. This is actually a $38 keyboard.
$38?
This is a $38 keyboard. I know, that's what blew me away. I'm like, really?
You sure you didn't get the numbers reversed?
No.
$83 keyboard?
That's the thing. I mean, this is a great price for a mechanical. If you've ever heard about a mechanical, but you've scoffed at people paying 10 times more for their keyboard than you did for theirs, for yours, buy one of these. Just buy one of these and try it and tell me that you don't prefer a mechanical keyboard. Now, you may prefer the mechanical keyboard. The people around you will hate your mechanical keyboard. Just FYI.
That's part of the bonus for you, though, isn't it?
Yeah. It makes me more annoying. You know, I'm always looking for that edge.
Well, so how long have you played with it? Have you tried popping the keys off?
Yeah. So
is it easily repairable?
It is a real mechanical keyboard. I can pop these off and put them back on without damaging anything.
Oh, yeah. You've got the little key.
Yeah. Right, look at that little key extractor. Boom. So, I thought when they said that they wanted to send it to me, I'm like, oh, this is going to be one of these cheap keyboards. I'm going to go, oh, it's nice, but it's like everything I've got.
Yeah.
I have a Rokat keyboard that we reviewed a very long time ago. And it's mechanical, but it wasn't great.
Right.
And that thing was $160.
Well, and so I'm thinking about the mechanical one that I got that's LED backlit. And it was one color.
Yeah.
I think it was around $80.
Yeah.
Nice keys, but it also had 2 USB cables. Like, one to power it and one to be a keyboard.
And it's like, no!
And so this
You're a keyboard!
This is just one USB, which makes sense. I want to hand this over to Hal. And see if he... What do you think of this one? Does this feel like one
he's,
of the
He's
Apple
a fan things? Of mechanical keyboards. I know that.
He's like, is that serviceable for
you? It feels like a Model M.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right? Definitely. We all know Model M.
It's got that buckling spring.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the two-step, the two-stage spring that people like so much.
Cool.
So, I don't know. I think I might have to get a couple of these things.
I think we need it for the show.
I do want to check longevity, because one of the things about mechanical keyboards is they get gummed up faster than membrane keyboards.
That would be my only hesitation. You've only just had this, though.
I've had it for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You know, if you need somebody to do a long-term test on it, though, I'm more than willing.
Well, we both know that you are a far better gamer than I am, and I need every advantage I can possibly get.
That's true. So does that mean I don't get a keyboard?
We'll talk, Ryan.
It comes down to practice, Padre. Practice, practice, practice.
Speaking of practice, now is the time for a little surprise. And it's not just a surprise for you, it's a surprise for me, too. Yesterday, I got back to my lab.
Right.
And this was waiting in Central Stores.
This is the surprise box.
This is a surprise box. It's Taiwan, evidently.
All right.
Oh, no, it's made in Taiwan.
Made in Taiwan.
Got it, got it.
The box or whatever's inside?
The inside. So inside, we've got ourselves a little Synology goodness. Now, we know Synology makes NASes. They also make my favorite router, the router I currently have in my network. But let's see what's beneath this tamper-resistant tape.
And not show off your address.
Ah, people know my address.
Oh, okay. Clearly, they're sending you mystery boxes.
So. So at least Synology knows my address. Besides, it's not my address. It's the address of the school.
So if there's no follow-up episode to this, we'll know that this was a
This
trap.
Was a bad idea. Oh, so it is, okay, it is a NAS, so it's a disk station. But I don't know which disk station it might be. You want to pull it out? I'll hold the box.
Sure. Huh. Huh. Ooh, she's Ooh. Heavy. She's got some heft to it.
It's a 1517. Oh, this is brand spanking new.
I
Wait a minute. Whoa. I think...
I don't know what that means.
I think this might be the one that's equipped with 10 gig LAN ports.
10 gig LAN ports? Actually, that sounds pretty awesome.
Unbox. Come on. We have to unbox this thing, Brian. I want to see what's inside here now. Actually, you know, let's back you off. I didn't realize that was going to be so.
Oh. Oh, wrong direction. We're our own camera.
There we go. Okay. There we go. You get that.
I'll take that. Thank you.
You get that
too. Power cable.
That quick installation.
Instructions.
Instructions.
Don't need that.
Hey, you want to hold that down.
Nice.
So this, you all have seen the 1515 Plus that I love so much.
Right.
Because I've got two of them. I've got my my standard and my hot standby. This, I believe, is the next version up. So they've added a little bit of processing power. They've given a little extra speed. This thing feels like they fully populated it, which...
I was going to say, it was pretty heavy.
Yeah. I don't know. Can you want to...
Yeah, get this little...
There we
Whoop.
Go.
Mmm, oh. Smells new.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Okay, so... Oh, I can't believe this. So, just like the 1515, I've got the 4 gigabit Ethernet ports, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've got two eSATA connectors, so I can either expand it to an eSATA drive or to a chassis.
Yeah.
I've got USB 3, so I can both hook up external drives, plus I could also use this to, like, hook up a wireless dongle.
Yeah.
But then... Whoop! This, Brian?
Fiber?
That... is the SFP Plus port, so I can hook up 10 gigabit Ethernet.
Oh, that's awesome.
Two of them. Oh, my goodness. So this was a problem, because these NASs were getting so fast that unless you had a switch and a client that could bond Ethernet, you couldn't get as much throughput out of this as it could actually provide.
Yeah.
Now, with two 10 gig Ethernet, not a problem.
You might want to brush the drool off of your mouth real
so
quick
nice.
Before.
Brian, look at this thing. It's so cute. Oh, my gosh. I'm so happy.
I can tell.
You know what? I was going to go to Las Vegas for NAB, and I was going to bring some stuff with me.
You might just bring this instead.
This is coming.
Yeah.
This is coming. But now I have to bust out one of my spare 10 gig switches, because I... Oh.
Yeah. It's well built.
This was a surprise unboxing. I do want to give you all a proper first look at this thing, because this, I mean, it's got all the same quality that I expect out of my 1515, but again, with that 10 gig Ethernet port, I don't even know what it would be able to do.
I think we're gonna have to do some benchmarks, right?
I want to equip this thing with SSDs. If I can get 20 gig out of this thing by bonding those two ports together,
you're a madman. It's just gonna get light on fire.
Synology, you have made me so happy. For as long as you let me hold on to this, I will.
As you test it out. Well, don't forget the instructions. You're gonna need those.
Yeah.
Garbage.
I'm a man, Brian. I don't need instructions. I'm probably gonna need those. Yeah. Now, the funny thing is, not too long ago, a 10 gig port would cost you at least $3,000, single 10 gig port.
What does this cost? Should we look it up?
I have no idea. Yeah, actually, is this even available? Did they send me a prototype? Not a prototype, but an early sample?
DS1517 Plus.
DS1517
Plus. It's a quad-core CPU.
Oh.
Optional M.2 SSD support. Okay, what's BTRFS? What's that mean?
That's a file protocol.
Oh, okay.
So the 1517, the bare one with the 8 gigabytes of memory, which is what this has, goes for about $912, mm-hmm. but then you add in the 10 gig interface card.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Mobile management, surveillance, backup, data security.
Oh my gosh! It has you can use an M2D17 adapter, uh-huh. and you could put dual M.2 cards in this thing.
Damn.
Seriously! Oh my gosh! Synology,
cool beans.
Yeah. All right. This is going to be a first look, and then we're going to do a full review on this. Mm-hmm. And this is going in my box. Don't let Brian touch it.
PCIe slot. Oh man.
It's gone,
you sure you don't need someone else to test this and a keyboard for you?
Hey, Brian, you know, I think, yeah, you can have the keyboard now.
Damn it. I should cut my mouth shut.
All right, folks, when we come back, we've got more of your questions and our answers. But first, I want to go ahead and take another break to thank another sponsor of Know How. Hey, Brian.
What's up?
I know it's not so much a problem for me.
What are you talking about?
I know sometimes you have problems with the whole facial hair thing.
Oh, yeah, the shaving thing. Yeah. So, yeah, I have to do that occasionally. Yeah, you know, not just once a month.
I just sandpaper a tiny bit, like once a month, and I'm good to go.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm not matching my my photo or my drawing on the board over there. But occasionally, I do like to not be so hairy.
Yeah, and the thing is, for people like you who are often hairy, as you know, you can see in your close-up videos.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Shaving can be a chore, right?
It can be a bit of a chore, and if I want to do it right, I want to enjoy it. So yeah. That's why I use the Harry's razor.
I will say this: there was one time I was with a benefactor, and they decided to take me to, it was like a spa day or something.
Spa day.
Which I thought was ridiculous, but
okay,
yeah, why not?
Continue.
And they kind of pampered me, and they gave me like the hot, warm towel shave. And I thought, hey, you know what? I wish it could be like this every day.
Mm-hmm.
It does kind of change how you look at that time that you spend doing personal grooming from.
Yeah.
It's something I have to do, too. It could actually be kind of nice.
Yeah, and as a man, my normal tendency is to just not really treat myself, but like when you have all the accessories and stuff that you can get from Harry's, like the shaving cream, I didn't even know what post-balm aftershave. It's basically aftershave.
Yeah.
Why would I use that? Because it smells really good.
It feels better after you use it.
But like, I wouldn't have gone out of my way otherwise if it didn't all come in one bundle.
Yeah. I think this is all a long way to say that, you know what? If you've been having that really, really bad experience shaving, if you do think it's a chore, maybe it's time for you to try Harry's. Now, Harry's is the place, the one-stop shop that you can go to get all your shaving needs. Now, for decades, one big razor company, and you know who I'm talking about, has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of their customers. Harry's wants to change all that. If you haven't heard of them before, Harry's was started by two best friends, Jeff and Andy. They were fed up with being overcharged for razors that were kept behind some plastic fence like it was in Fort Knox. So they started their own razor company to give people what they deserve, a great shave at a fair price. Harry's shave sets start at just $15, and they include everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. That includes a weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering gel, a travel blade cover, and, well, this. It just makes it an experience. It makes it something that you look forward to rather than a chore. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades that they want you to try their shave set for free. You just cover shipping when you sign up. You heard that right. Start your free trial today at harrys.com/knowhow. Turn your chore into a personal spa day. That's harrys.com/knowhow. harrys.com/knowhow. And we thank Harry's for their support of Know How. All right, Brian, let's get back to it.
Sure.
We got a little bit more feedback that we want to cover before we end the episode. First of all, we've got something here from Harry Henze, I think.
Yeah.
Henze, probably.
This is, Harry asks, I have taught myself some coding from Crystal Reports, Excel, VBA, and WinBatch, but I would like to learn more. I work two jobs and have kids with medical problems. I don't have time to go to class. What are your suggestions? Thanks in advance.
Harry, first of all, I'm very sorry to hear about your kids. You know, anytime kids need medical attention, it's sad. It's a little disappointing. But I'm glad that you're looking forward to learning a little bit of coding.
That's, yeah, much more. It's very admirable. Yeah.
Very, very admirable. So kudos, absolute kudos to you. Here's the thing. I get this question a lot. People say, well, what programming language should I learn? And the answer is... Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to be flippant.
You know, I had that same problem. I didn't know what coding to start with, but it also depends on where you want to go.
Yeah.
So what do you want to do? And I think when I was asking you what code I should start with, I think you recommended C++ a lot. And that was one of the classes that was offered at my community college. So I took that just to get kind of into it and then realized that I liked it and it gave me the basics. But I enjoyed using Python more than I did. That kind of clicked with me more and was more in line of some of the projects that I wanted to play with.
And see, that's the thing. When you talk about what should I program on, the answer is whatever you're going to program on.
Yeah.
You find the thing that you want to do and you pick the language for it. The language, believe it or not, is actually inconsequential because it's the programming thought. It's the way that you think. Precisely. Yeah. Because a loop is a loop, no matter if you're in Python or C. Mm-hmm. Syntax is a little bit different, but it's going to work the same. When you're talking about logic trees, it's going to work the same way as it does in Java, as it does in Go. Right. Again, it's just syntax. But what you need is something that you can get into. And what I mean by that is if you pick a programming language that is so complicated, so hard to learn for the beginner, or so ephemeral, it doesn't have any real-world impact other than what you see on your screen, it's hard to stay with it. What I always recommend, and this is why I recommended C++ to you, is an Arduino.
Yeah.
Pick up an Arduino, because it does something in the real world.
Right.
That it kind of, there's an extra reward you get when you see it actually working, and you realize, my code did something actual.
Yeah, something about bringing it into the physical sense is definitely triggered or sparked my interest more. And where we were using Arduinos for a lot of our projects and just the ability to, you know, set something in the code and then say, move the arm, you know, 3/4 to the left, upload to the Arduino. And it's a very low barrier of learning curve along with just financially. You could just get yourself a cheap Arduino.
It's $3. Literally $3.
The IDE, you don't have to pay for that. And there's so much information online that you could start like a little project, fiddle with the code, and then start the learning process.
Yeah. And, you know, something we used to recommend when we were still doing Coding 101 was just mess around. There's so many examples for Arduino that you can just copy and paste. You put it in there, and then you start changing little things until it breaks. That's one of the best ways to learn if you're not going to be doing it professionally immediately. That's a great way to learn because it allows you to take what other people have done, customize it in your way, and you'll notice after a while of doing that, you just start to naturally know which commands do what and how you solve a particular problem. Remember, coding is all about finding something in the real world and then writing code to fix it.
So now I have to do a little bit of research because I don't know what Crystal Reports is, but it's apparently a business intelligence application. Do you know what that is?
It's a scripting language.
It's a scripting language. Yeah. And, I mean, Excel, VBA, and what's WinBatch exactly? Do you know?
It's probably like a batch file processor? I used to play with it all the time.
Okay, so I mean, he's already kind of gotten himself started into it and taught himself some stuff. And I mean, if you want to have the physicality of the Arduino, I'd recommend that. But as far as like continuing with the path that he's on now, just focus on a language and learn it. And then when you do, if there's a job that you have in mind that you've then, like, you realize you have to learn that language, you already have one in your repertoire that it's way easier to switch to another one once you've already, like, mastered one.
Go ahead and download Visual Studio from Microsoft. It's free. You can get it for free because you're not using it for professional use. And it has several different frameworks in there that you can play with and a lot of examples. And again, doesn't matter what language you choose as long as you can stay with it.
Yeah, stay with it, learn the fundamentals, and then you can transfer those to any language after you've learned it. Yeah, just syntax after that.
Now let's go to another one. We've got one from Omer Donmez.
So Omer asks, I recently listened to KH286 about Raspberry Pi gaming machines. Afterwards, I was inspired to create a Raspberry Pi gaming machine to gift to my fiancé for her birthday. Perfect. She loves playing the NES and N64 games. I already purchased the Raspberry Pi 3, and I'm about to install RetroPie onto it. I now need to find ROMs to play. Do you have any suggestions where to find clean, safe ROMs? Thank you for a great show and amazing work. I love listening to Twit.
We get this a lot. Here's the thing, folks. It's actually illegal for you to trade ROMs.
Even if you... So I think it's... Because Radford Castro, who used to be an employee here, he pioneered how to rip games from cartridges and make ROMs out of them.
He literally wrote the book
He literally wrote the book on it. And I remember having a discussion with him about the legality of ROMs and things. And his standpoint was, if you own the game, like, you purchase the cartridge and there's not really an available way to get it, Like, I guess legally you can rip it from the cartridge and then that's your copy of the game.
There's actually a DMCA exception if the media is no longer playable.
Yes.
But, I mean, we are in a super gray area, and if it goes to court, you will lose, period.
Right.
That's a given. But here's the thing. We can't tell you because then we become legally liable. However, we all know where you can get them.
Yeah. So usually when I get questions like these, I'm like, oh, it's law enforcement asking if I downloaded any ROMs illegally.
So we can't tell you. And we can't even tell you any of the places that we trust. We can't even tell you whether or not we've done it.
No, I have not.
We will say it's actually relatively easy.
It is. It is a gray area. I'm trying to think of how to word this without implicating myself. Allegedly, I may or may not have gotten a lot of ROMs from friends. Like, usually that's how...
That's usually the best way to do it. Someone you trust. I would not trust a Juarez site.
No. Your best friend is Google. As a search engine, do a little bit of research. Have some ad blockers on, probably. Yeah. Have NoScript enabled. I don't know if Tor is really...
Tor won't help you, but what I would do is, if you really are serious about this and you've got Windows 10 or another operating system that supports a hypervisor, start up like an instance of your operating system that can be destroyed right after you're done with it.
Yeah, because if you do go to the wrong website and download the wrong thing, you will be
crawling on the dark side.
But just do a little bit of research on Google. Maybe dig through some forums or something. It's really not that difficult to find ROMs.
It's not. It's super easy. But we can't tell you.
No, but good luck on the project. It's a lot of fun. There's actually a lot of free games out there, like Cave Story is one of them, too.
Cave Story is a great game. Actually a really good game.
Mm-hmm. So, not necessarily that you have to, download
illegally,
but
good luck. Cave Story is the only game I have on my RetroPie.
Yeah, because it comes pre-installed with the RetroPie project.
I don't have any of those other games.
Yeah.
At all.
No.
I've spent hours playing.
No. Ever. The nice thing is once you do may or may not have gotten those games from friends, you have them forever. Just keep them, archived on your NAS. So whenever you do another Raspberry Pi project, you have them.
All right, let's do one more. We've got one more from Jason Perry, who actually wants to go back to GrowHow.
Okay, so Jason asks, looking for suggestions, my grow table came with the house. Okay, this that's always a plus, right?
That's good.
This happens every year. You have over a month till I want to move these outside, okay, but they are growing above the lights. I clearly have a need for a version 2. What would your multi-level grow table do to extend a plant's lifespan on a table before they have to be moved?
This is actually a very good question, Jason. I'm glad you asked it. The first thing Alex, go back to that picture. The first thing you'll notice, these are very leggy stems.
Yeah.
What that means is that the light was too far away.
So they're reaching.
Right. So plants will naturally stretch towards the light. So you want an adjustable light, because what you can do is you can actually lower the light when they're in the early germination stage so that they're not constantly stretching, which means they're not going to get too close to the light. And then you just gradually lift it as they get higher and higher and higher. Now, you've got a very specific issue because you want to be using these outdoors. You're just growing them. You're
getting them started
indoors.
Yeah.
Right, so that they'll survive the winter, survive the frost. Mm-hmm. Feel free. Do not be afraid to trim back. Plants actually do better when you trim them back. We've shown you on GrowHow, when you trim, at like the terminal stem, what's going to happen is the two stems on either side will grow out. You will mm-hmm. make a bushier plant. That's typically what people want.
Yeah.
You want more produce. You want more production.
Concentrated that way. Yeah.
Precisely. So the two things is get your light movable. And you've seen us on GrowHow show you those super cheap ratchets that we got at Amazon.
Yeah.
Just little pulleys mm-hmm. that they cost, $1.50 each.
Right.
You put that on your light and you just raise it or lower it depending on how high your plants are.
Right.
And then trim them back to so that they'll stay manageable during the winter.
Mm-hmm. Or even if you don't have, the available space to lower or raise your light, I guess you could just put like boards or something yeah. underneath and slowly lower it or raise it depending on what you need. But do you still have the picture up, Al? Because I noticed, so it's really yeah. arched too.
Yep.
Like the plants are really tall in the middle and short on the sides. So should he be like rotating them or have like some reflectiveness on the sides to get more of an even?
You might, yeah. I mean, typically a grow
or those
table.
Different plants.
You're not going to be being on a grow table for a super long time.
Yeah.
The other thing, if you look at this picture, he's got some starts that are way down and some that are way up. That's
yeah.
that's because they're different plants, because they're different breeds.
Okay.
But it never hurts. I always have milk crates. So you can raise up some of the plants that are really, really short. Because what's going to happen here
yeah.
is that those large leafy plants are going to start shading the smaller ones. If you lift them up so that their canopies are all uniform, you get a much better distribution of light.
We've had that problem with the...
just with the Aero Garden.
The Aero Garden, yeah.
The basil grows so fast, and it's so leafy, it'll grow over the other plants. And now the other plants are just sitting there going, okay, I guess I'm not growing anymore.
I'm just
going
to be sad now. Yeah, I think the poor dill is the one that gets it the worst.
The dill gets destroyed. We had been trying to kill a plant. We've been like aggressively trimming back. We finally
yeah.
trimmed it all the way to a nub.
Did
and it still
back?
Sprouted. And I'm like, no. And I cut it again. And I guess I had cut it just soon enough where there wasn't enough energy left in the stem.
It's like, goodbye.
It's like, ah.
What was it? Was it the dill?
It was
that
dill.
You
killed?
Yeah.
Dill.
I remember the parsley you kept trying to kill, too.
Yeah, you can't kill parsley.
No. That
it's like
root
bamboo.
System pretty much took over everything in there.
It grew into the pulp. It went inside
it's
the
trying
pulp.
To escape.
It was trying to commit
it's sentient.
Suicide. It's like, chop me up.
Kill me.
Go figure. All right, folks, we've had a lot of fun, and we know that there's a lot of information here, everything from the products that we took a look at to some of the links for the answers to your questions. We want to make sure you can get to them easily. Brian, do we have a place,
a
central repository?
Yes, and it's available on the worldwide internet. And
internets?
It lives at twit.tv/KH. Yes, the internets. The series of tubes that lead to our content is at twit.tv/KH. And like Padre had mentioned, all the show notes from this episode link to the very affordable gaming laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the Synology, whenever that comes available.
It's never coming back.
I'm never going to get to play with that,
no,
am I?
No, it's mine now.
Jerk. But you can also download it.
Synology demands it back. And I'll go, it got lost.
It got lost. But, you know, Padre, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because I like to spend my time looking at other people's projects. And there's a place for them to do that or ask questions like they did on this episode.
Yeah, and it's on Google Plus. Just go to Plus, look for KnowHow. And once you ask to be added to the group, it is a very short approval process because we have to keep out all the spammers. You get access to over 11,000 Kitas. That's our know-it-alls, people who are at all stages of their maker DIYer journey. You can ask questions about a project. Maybe you can pick up a couple of ideas for future projects. Or if you're an expert, why not help the young folk or the inexperienced folk to get into the game? This is a community. This is something that we can make. And you can do it, again, by going to Google Plus and looking for KnowHow.
That's right, but that's not the only place you can find us. If you want to see GIFs or even maybe pictures of my dog, Tibbs, which I don't know if you can pick that up over the mic. Come on, Tibbs. He's in studio today.
We have a studio dog again.
He's slurping up water like a madman right now. Yeah, are you done? You done? We're just doing a show. It's cool.
He's just looking at you like, where are we going home?
Yeah, he's bored. But you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at @crank_hippo.
And you're going to find me at @PadreSJ. And you're going to find the third member of our crew who is right now laughing at Terbs. We call him Jimbo. You can find Jimbo at twitter.com/ANELF.
Excuse me, Padre, that's pronounced Alex.
Jimbo's much better. Okay, you can find Alex Jimbo at twitter.com/ANELF3. By the way, this is the Turbles. This is our corgi.
He's a good boy.
This is our mascot.
He's my bud.
Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burdett.
And now that you corgi how?
Go corg it? Oh, he's so happy to be here. Sit on table.
Corgi, 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 rocking everywhere.